With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine.
Diamonds are a girl's best friend. And it's time for a friendship bracelet.
I may be in Brooklyn trying to make it in this economy, but I'm still a mean girl and in high school.
I love a little Alex McCord.
So stupid.
Try to survive in this economy moment. Aren't we all?
We are.
Some of us are trying to survive, and some of us, my friend, are trying to hide. And this is a little round of hide and go seek. Guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 211. And I'm so excited to be joined by someone who has been on the People's Couch before and who I love talking to, a BravoCon bestie. Guys, welcome back, co-host of the podcast Come Through Queen. Not only one and only you. Oh, only words, fun times, Brendan Davis.
Wow, that intro. Thank you so much.
I mean, the one... the only Mr. Brendan Davis, who I did truly meet at BravoCon. I feel like I had we engaged with each other? That's a fun way to put it. On anything? No.
Really BravoCon. We met at BravoCon, I think, through Louis Peitzman, because he was someone like in the crowd who I knew. And then it was after that horrible Beverly Hills.
I knew as soon as you said horrible, it could only be the VH. After that, we ran to each other to...
Yeah, I think we walked over to that other space and went to, like, the mm-hmm. producer's panel. And then, like, mm-hmm. we ended up in the summer house thing. And then we ended up in the mm-hmm. Luann thing.
I mean, that's how kind of things go. Oh, and the Luann... So Luann closed BravoCon with a special performance of The Countess and Friends or whatever. But it was so odd to me because every event at BravoCon was stacked with Bravo celebrities.
Right.
So it would be like so-and-so, but also three other people, likely from other franchises. Phenomenal. So Lou and Friends, you would think she would bring on
Sonya.
You would think she would bring on I don't know, Kim Zolciak. You would think that she would bring on Melissa Gorga, mm-hmm. any number of performing Bravolabs. And she had a lovely comedian, but she didn't have any other talent. And she was also like an hour, hour and a half late for the show.
And it was a Sunday night. So like an hour and a half later on a Sunday night is kind of just like bleak. I just was happy to be belly up to the bar, just like chatting. And that was fine for me.
I mean, we stayed at the bar the entire performance, mm-hmm. and it was honestly one to remember. I loved it. I can't imagine being in a seat in the theater just because we had access to so many drunken women spilling out of their beaded outfits. I loved every single one of them. They were out of their minds plastered. People started drinking at like 9 a.m. and this is at God only knows o'clock at night. And it was truly 3 days of strong turtle time. And people were rowdy and it was I honestly, truly, it was like one of my favorite moments at BravoCon. I had so much fun just staying at the bar the entire time.
Yeah, just watching people. Like if BravoCon comes back and you're a person who you might not fit the dynamic of who actually would go to BravoCon, if you can snag a ticket and just go watch these people, mainly like middle-aged to elderly women just like getting lit. It's wild.
I mean, and as someone who is perpetually mid-20s plus, it is a spiritual place in which I live. Mm-hmm. It was wild because the demographic was like overwhelmingly, and we spoke to so many people. We introduced, you know, we're chatty people. We podcast for a living or a pursuit. It felt like the women, at least at the Lou event. I mean, the demographics were really honestly different according to the panel.
Sure.
Like the panel at the Atlanta event was different than the panel for Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. The quality was also enormously different. But with the Lou show, it did feel like overwhelmingly white women from the Midwest and maybe Southeast who were like, I don't know, mid to late 40s plus, and everyone was in sequins and everyone was looking to have a good time. It was really kind of interesting that the demographics really did change according to the event that you were in a really kind of almost drastic way.
Yeah, for sure. And some of the smaller panels, like the producers panels, had kind of more the diehard fans and like people kind of more in tune with like the everyday Bravo thing, like you and I are, like people who would like look at the Reddit or whatever. Whereas like the Luann event is like the more surface fans, women who turn on Watch What Happens Live after they've had four glasses of wine and just like have it on as background noise.
Totally. And both are amazing kind of quasi personality types. If we're going to do that, like personality, the like EXT
for sure
thing. I mean, there was a different personality type, which would be a part of the demographic. I think that those producer panels, of which there were a few, the audience was diehards and then and really a lot of content creators, because so many of us talk about what goes into shooting these episodes, how they look, the difference between the environment of like reality versus reality TV producing reality TV are different. And so that was also really engaging because I felt like you could feel that in the questions that were asked at the producer panel versus at the other events, with the only asterisk being, and I think there's video of this, I need to put this up on IGTV, I was shit-faced because I had a single glass of wine at early afternoon or something on the way to a producer panel. I think I was with Tracy Morrissey and maybe Pet Shop Boy. And I was so drunk and I walked into, and literally a single glass of wine, I was out of my mind. And I walked into the producer panel and maybe I saw Lewis or somebody else and they were like, hey, how are you? And I literally said, I am so drunk. And I had tried to get to ask a question during the Q&As at several panels, and it had essentially become a joke at this point because I was the next in line at least three panels, and they closed the Q&A right in front of me, which I loved having that record. So I got in line expecting to be cut, mm-hmm. didn't have a question, and then I realized they were going to ask me, and I was so drunk. I don't know what. Somebody took video because I think I asked two questions at two panels. There is a video somewhere in the phone of me just like really trying my level best to like not make a complete ass of myself to producers from like Atlanta, Potomac.
Trying to power through it. Wow. You know
really
what?
Really trying to power through.
You know what I want to see? I want to see a producers panel with the people who were in the van or whatever when the Jen Shaw moment went down. That is what is going to power me through to go to the next BravoCon. If there's Salt Lake City producers who were in the room where it happens.
I mean, I want to talk to Heather about that. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to Meredith about it. But it could only really happen once a plea deal has been
for
done
sure.
or something. Because none of these women are going to want that used as like evidence mm-hmm. or called in for questioning. And you know production right now is like, do not talk about any details. You can wink and nod
for
if
sure.
you must. Which Meredith and Heather have both done mm-hmm. on Social or Clubhouse. But like no details, absolutely not. Because we don't want to have to deal with that with like the federal government.
For sure.
I would love it. I mean, they asked some questions, obviously. They weren't just like, hey, so how's your second season going? Like, they had genuine questions when the feds, like, rolled on up to filming to see what's up. I mean, the camera people, where do you go? Where do you run?
That day, like, so I always think about the day that Luann got arrested and how big of a day it
Christmas
was.
Eve.
Like, in my life, and that sounds awful, but it's like everyone.
It was a huge moment.
Everyone was reaching out, you know?
Yep.
But the Jen Shaw one was like even more because it was just like Lou's thing was like an accident. She got drunk. She like walked into the wrong hotel room. She was rowdy. The Jen Shaw thing, the fact that it was like allegedly so calculated and all of that, it just made it such a more momentous moment that mm-hmm. we'll always remember.
I mean, Lou said she threatened to kill a cop. She was a little drunk. Mm-hmm. She went into the wrong hotel room. She had a night. And Jen Shaw had been planning a massive fraud that affected at the least several, many, many
yeah.
hundreds of people, if not thousands, that, you know, led to however many stolen bank accounts or bank accounts with stolen
mm-hmm.
funds. Literally one account alone has $5 million. She has been stealing and thieving and living her best inspo by Trump U life
mm-hmm.
for many, many years. And for her to think this is never going to come out or that she is so good she's going to get captured or that she is just running this story and is in control until the end. I mean, it has the markings of a great housewife, which she is really not.
Ugh.
It's the best thing about her is the fact that she successfully had this insane, now going to be federally prosecuted crime because she was a successful criminal for several years. I can't say she was a successful housewife. She was burning out.
I mean, this is the only thing that has made her interesting to me the entire mm-hmm. time she's been in front of mm-hmm. us.
I agree.
Yeah.
I honestly agree. I just feel like so much of it has been built on how many generations mm-hmm. of performative housewives that it's like, wow, you were actually a real legit criminal
wow.
this whole time. Would have loved to see that story. Understand why I couldn't. I couldn't. But like how interesting that was bubbling underneath all of this other performative housewifery.
I know.
Would love to unpack that. Can't wait to rewatch season one with that in mind.
And then season two, it's like literally watch what happens because I like mm-hmm. cannot wait. I cannot wait.
I mean, what a reckoning this is going to be for housewives in general.
Mm-hmm.
Because there have been whispers about certain housewives or long bubbling over to the top, you know, lawsuits or questions about
yeah.
housewives and money and possible fraud, oftentimes through the husband, not necessarily through the wife who was maybe complicit or involved, but that isn't known for several of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And Jen is the first one to be like, seemingly at the center of this, at the center of this years-long escapade that has landed several other people in serious, you know, criminal jeopardy and consequence. And she was running this. There's no, you know, I think she's been reacting to this the way that Erica Jane reacted to the Tom stuff, which is to say unsuccessfully online, where she's trying to wink and nod. But there is a very big difference between what people think Erica could be accused of and what Jen has been accused of, you know, in SLC. There is a huge difference. And yet she still thinks she can perform this role with a bow in her cap, and it's just not going to end well for her.
I know, the fact that she's going to continue to like film and all of that, I'm like, what are you doing to yourself? But it'll be fun for us to watch for at least a season. And if she thinks she's going to get the Teresa goes to prison treatment and like the show revolving around her, it's not going to happen, Jen. You're not as established as Teresa was when she went to prison.
Completely. And you don't have the fan adoration, attention, history, in some ways respect. You're not a housewife archetype. You're like the inside, but you didn't fill in the inside. You didn't stay in between the lines.
Right.
There is nothing about you that was authentic. This is the biggest, most exciting reveal of your inauthenticity is this moment, which will get you this second season, which you were ostensibly going to have regardless, but you're not going to. I would be shocked if Bravo brought her back for a third, which is a different conversation than will she film a second?
Yeah.
You know, because I don't think it's going to come down to her choice. And I think she's going to be, I think her schedule is going to be filled.
Exactly.
I think she's going to be unavailable.
I could see her one day being like the Danielle Staub of the franchise, who they try to bring back like as a friend of, and it just doesn't work out and it's not successful. And then she starts a weird podcast where it's her and Dana Wilkie talking about like Margaret Josephs. I listened, not to recommend another podcast on a podcast, but go listen to Danielle Staub's one from last week. It is truly a roller coaster. It's Dana Wilkie sounds like the Dana Wilkie sounds like the reasonable party on that podcast, which is so interesting.
First off, Danielle's podcast art, I do know for many months was misspelled, which is the best thing about it, I can tell you without listening to a second. What was Danielle even saying or not saying or trying to get out?
She's just ranting about like Marge and like everyone else on the show. And it's like Dana's like trying to like chime in, but it's just like it's unhinged.
Have you listened to several episodes?
No. My friend tipped me off that this was the one to listen to if you wanted to hear like some batshit stuff.
There's nothing, I have to tell you with all sincerity, there's nothing I want to listen to less
than
Danielle Staub, not on Bravo, thank God, but talking about it.
I know.
Knowing, I mean, I've seen that clip of her Instagram Live where she's sees that someone calls her Beverly and she loses her mind and like becomes violent as a result. I've seen that clip, I don't know, 10, 15 times because it's like wild. It's almost it's maybe the most entertaining thing that she has done while also being incredibly scary. Mm-hmm. But I cannot imagine long form Danielle Staub.
It's wild.
I can't imagine it.
There's also like a rant about like Heather McDonald at some point. You don't need to listen to it. Actually, I more recommend you just following Joe Gunn on Twitter and Instagram because he's pulling all the best like Danielle Staub clips of all time, and he's just doing the work there, so that's great.
Oh my god. And Angel, shout out to Joe Gunn. Angel, if you guys aren't following him on Instagram, you need to, because Twitter is no longer a thing, hate to tell you.
Sad.
So listen, a big piece came out. We're talking about the reckoning of the Jen Shaw of it all, but there was a, to me, very interesting long form piece that came out on Vulture, which is essentially New York Magazine, this week, called The Soul of Bravo, written by Anna Peel. You know, the theme of which is a year of national reckonings on race and inequality has tested how real the housewives should be.
Right.
And I highly encourage that people read it. It is truly a long form piece. I just reread it right before we started recording to like remember. it has since been updated since it was published online, because Portia, we're recording this Friday morning-ish, Portia went on Instagram Live last night because she said she was affected and wanted to essentially counter a part of the piece, which she said was not factual and more opinion-based, which is there is a moment in the piece where they talk about a scene that had been filmed that was cut from Atlanta, and also some possible frustration that members of the cast felt about Candy contacting the network relating to social action and steps the network can take to better itself when it comes to how it is supporting and amplifying Black voices, both as talent behind the scenes through its NBC Page program and several other steps. And Portia's reasoning on the Instagram Live was essentially, listen, my conversation was with Candy was really revolving around the idea of us approaching the network as a group and not individually. I think we have more power. But now that I know that you approach the network, I think we just are the rest of the folks approach them, you know, for a monetary donation. And this happened in text message. Candy said she had heard that they had been shit talking her. Portia gave Candy receipts. And Candy's response was essentially like, I don't get why this is a big deal that we shouldn't be fighting about this. I don't get that this is why a big deal that I went to them and didn't loop you in. And I get Portia's response entirely, which is like, had we strategized this, more voices are greater than one. And I get Candy's idea that, like, it doesn't matter as long as this stuff is done. Ultimately, these women were able to resolve what sounds like a miscommunication when it turns to, in terms of strategy, let alone execution. But Kenya heard about this and kind of ran with it. And Portia feels like Kenya has been using elements of this situation and miscommunication to bring down Portia's character. So Portia took to IG Live and was like, this is how why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling. And I'm also going to put the text messages online. And then I'm going to bring this all back to issues that I care about revolving around Black Lives Matter, because at the end of the day, that is what that is the reason that I am using the platform in the way that I am, to bring attention to the Black Lives Matter movement, which I thought was incredibly powerful. It was a lot.
Yeah, and it sounds to me a lot of the issue here is potentially Bravo or the production company not wanting to include these, like, so these conversations about Bravo and production. And so because they edited some of that out, you get moments where it's Kenya downplaying Portia's activism without getting, like, the full conversation that Candy and Portia were having. And so I see it kind of both ways. I mean, I do think that there's, like, sometimes an insidious part of Kenya that, like, runs with stuff to cause trouble. But I think the bigger problem is that we're not getting the full, we're not on our screens, we're not seeing the full picture. So then now the cast members have to take to their own means, like Instagram Live and releasing text messages, so that we're getting the full picture of what's actually going on. We're talking around it because Bravo probably doesn't want to have a conversation on their own show about their cast members approaching them to do better, if that makes sense.
Exactly. And that's sort of, you know, so there was a film scene where Candy is saying to Portia, and I'm sorry if this is incorrect, but from my understanding, that Candy is saying to Portia, you know, like, why are you guys talking shit? I, like, heard this stuff, and like Meanie's leaking texts to blogs and stuff. And Portia felt uncomfortable with the fact that at the end of the day, she was in a group of Black women who were arguing about, in the best of ways, hyper nuanced aspects of this, and really in Portia's head, essentially arguing and splintering about the Black Lives Matter movement, and that she felt it was not an appropriate representation of who these women are, and also the importance of the Black Lives Matter movement, which she didn't want to be co-opted for the purposes of reality TV. So Portia said she approached the network about this and that they agreed not to air this scene, which wasn't aired. What was aired was Kenya saying Portia is only doing this for camera time, or she's only doing it because she knows she's going to get press attention, which is also damaging, but I think a different thing because we sort of know who Kenya is at this point. And you know, ultimately, Kenya can feel the way that she does, and Portia had every right to respond on her platform where she felt like she wasn't going to be edited. You know, that people, at least now in Portia's head, have the benefit of this information.
Yeah.
My hope is that it doesn't rip apart her and Candy because she's releasing these text messages. My hope is that Candy gets what I felt that Portia was saying, which is ultimately we need to come together, and Kenya's acting in opposition to that.
Yeah. That being said, I think that like all of the piece is amazing. And the part that impressed me the most was all of the steps that Candy took with her letter and the things that came from it, like getting a restructuring in place at NBC Universal so that we can eventually get more Black people in the C-suite, in the executive suites, opening up internships specifically and holding place for people from historically Black colleges. There's just like a whole myriad, a list of things that she did. She really was a big push behind making sure that those specials aired on actual television, which you and I had voiced earlier, I guess, last year as well. So it's like she did so much work. And I see why, like, I also see why Portia's frustrated to not be a part of that, because I think Portia has been an important voice in the Bravo universe as far as changing things and making sure that Black voices are uplifted. So I get both sides, but like you said, it sounds like a big miscommunication that I hope doesn't tear them apart, you know?
Yeah, and I think that Portia and Candy are so much stronger just together on the show. I feel like the quality of the show is better when they are united and not divided. I genuinely believe that.
Agreed.
And so my hope is that Kenya doesn't fuck all of this up. Like, I just, we know Kenya's energy, and I think that Kenya is incredibly self-destructive and toxic, and I think great for the franchise. My hope is that this doesn't become a thing where Candy is weaponized in between these two women, because ultimately, I mean, just the work that Candy did in her work with the network behind the scenes is incredible. And Portia has been a part of the national conversation, which is about issues greater than Bravo and Atlanta, the Real Housewives of Atlanta itself. I mean, I genuinely, truly do believe that the work she did bringing people to the polls got Biden the presidency. I mean, I think there is a genuine line between the action that she has done for a sustained period of time and actual results that
for sure
can be felt and should be appreciated.
Yeah, I mean, I think most, if not all, of the women in Atlanta, it's such a breath of fresh air to hear them speak out really actively. They were all, I remember, however, two years ago when Stacey Abrams was running, they were all publicly supporting her. It was great to see the little scene that we got of Cynthia and Portia on the day that, like, Joe Biden was actually elected president. It's, like, good to see them celebrating in a world where so many of the housewives are so vague about their politics in order to, like, retain as much audience as, like, they can. It's refreshing to see these women be pretty clear.
And I feel like the piece really gets into the idea of politics versus personality and politicizing opinions, but maybe sort of misinterpreting the difference between opinions and racism itself. I mean, there's a line that Andy says to the journalist, Anna Peel, I believe is her name, where he says she's talking to him about essentially the Kelly Dodd of it all. And a great interest of many people in the Bravo community that to see Kelly no longer exist as a full-time housewife. And Andy says, it's troublesome to me. I disagree with her point of view about COVID, but there are a lot of people who share her opinion. And by the way, she is in Orange County, where her opinion is probably the prevailing opinion. The line between celebrating someone's outspokenness and not liking someone's outspokenness is really blurring these days. Bravo is meant to be escapism, and I don't personally think that the people on Bravo should be on trial for their political and cultural views. That doesn't seem that fun to me.
I feel like that is kind of erasing a lot of the other stuff that Kelly Dodd said. It wasn't only about COVID. It was like there was, like, I remember the quote unquote Drunk Wives Matter shirt that she like was posting on social media. There's a lot of stuff. And but I do think that there's like an interesting conversation here, because on one hand, it's like Ramona Singer is an awful person. On the other hand, it's like I like watching her on my TV. And where's the line is my question. And I think this piece gets into like where we're all trying to figure out where that line is. And it's like Bravo's going through a lot of growing pains right now when they're trying to be more inclusive. It like puts, for example, we're adding women of color to some of these shows, but then when you add Tiffany Moon to Dallas, she mm-hmm. then has to do all of the labor to and deal with like her racist cast member, Brandy, and has to do so much work because Brandy's not willing to do any work in the situation. So we're going through some like extreme growing pains on Bravo right now. And I think this piece gets into it. And I think this piece makes it clear that there's not like a clear cut solution as far as like how we move forward. And we're going to be like figuring this out and having the conversation as people who watch Bravo and as Bravo itself moves forward. I think it's really interesting.
I think that there is a segment of the Bravo universe that is progressive, that there is a small segment that does say, I don't want to see this person on my screen. Mm-hmm. They're a Trump supporter or they're conservative. And I disagree vehemently with that. Mm-hmm. I think that people are more than their politics, which I might completely disagree with. Mm-hmm. I also think if I am going to live in a bubble, what a small, lonely world that will be for me. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the Bravo world is consumed by many personalities, many of whom are terrible people, regardless mm-hmm. of who you're voting for. And we're not going to I don't think it's necessarily appropriate to have a barometer that's set only on who you're casting your vote for. Mm-hmm. And if there's a misconception that that's what I'm interested in, I have said repeatedly that it's not. Sure. I also think it's kind of gross to say that you're only interested in a world in which you might feel safe, because the reality is people who voted along your lines are also probably trash. Mm-hmm. So where are you're only going off of their political opinions, because they may also say really problematic shit. Nobody on Bravo is necessarily a great person. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they might not be interested in participating in the art form that is this very specific kind of reality TV. That's not a path I'm interested in. I'm interested in trying to connect the dots between this person I might completely disagree with mm-hmm. and realizing that they are also still human.
Yeah.
That maybe some of their experiences have led them to a place that, again, I might not agree with, but it does also still provide or push people to have a conversation they wouldn't normally have. And at the end of the day, you might learn something about yourself by watching this person that you wouldn't necessarily go to brunch with, mm-hmm. but is still sharing their story and experience, which is at the end of the day, multifaceted. If you are only allowing yourself to enjoy people that you feel like you agree with, mm-hmm. that eliminates, I would say, 97% of the people that we see on screen, which includes people from New York, which includes yeah. people from progressive cities that you might think are in line with your political views, but have other views relating to their life or experiences or opinions that you might also disagree with. So I'm mm-hmm. not going to draw a line in the sand about this one aspect. However, I do think it is incredibly problematic that the network has a very inconsistent idea of how to hold people accountable. Mm-hmm. And Andy at one point refers to the quote-unquote Bravo wink, which is the idea that they might film someone doing terrible things, but the way they edit it is a wink and a nod to the audience that the network knows this person is trash. That is a very difficult thing to do when you're talking about racist behavior that mm-hmm. these women are communicating or expressing. Brandi Redmond, I don't know if the network held her accountable in the ways that they decided to hold Kenya accountable for the culturally appropriative, that's a new right. fun way to spin that word, Halloween quote-unquote costume that was incredibly damaging and problematic. Mm-hmm. Kenya was held accountable. The article goes into meetings, discussions that Kenya had, and Kenya publicly apologized. I don't know what, if any, consequence Brandy faced for the racist video, aside from Brandy telling us herself, she was very upset.
Right.
I don't know if her consequence was onboarding in a woman of Asian descent who, as you said, was then responsible for dealing with the brunt of Brandy's anxiety and fear about her own behavior and whether or not she was going to say something else terrible, harmful, whatever it could be. With Orange County, Kelly has, to my mind, never been held accountable for repeated acts of racist behavior, which is a different conversation to me than who did this person vote for, even though I may have my own opinion of how the two are linked, because that is an assumption of this person, regardless of whether or not it is correct, which is very different from Kelly going on Instagram and saying Black Lives Matter protesters are animals and terrorists. That is racist to me, to the world, to reality, to whatever else. The network, to my mind, has never corrected her for that, for spreading disinformation, which has possibly killed people.
Right.
You that's not me being dramatic. That is someone with hundreds of thousands of followers saying, don't wear a mask. This is fake. It's not real. Mm-hmm. That is dangerous weaponization of your platform, which you receive because of your ongoing employment with the network.
Right.
And their version of the Bravo wink is Andy going on Radio Andy and saying, she's not my doctor. Like, where, when it comes to the line, I don't even see it.
Yeah. Well, with Kelly, I think there was a brief moment where they tried to reel her in and she appeared on Watch Happens Live and they made her apologize on air. But
she read from that, like,
but
fun little
then it's like she turned right around and was like exhibiting the same behavior again and again and again.
Right.
And it's like, I think they should have done more, but it's also like she's so irresponsible and so out of control that I think it's hard to get her to hold her responsible. But I mean, there's the option. You don't have to employ her anymore if she's that out of control.
Well, yeah, I mean, why were, this was the first time to me that publicly the network admitted that Stassi and Kristen were actually fired, their contracts weren't renewed, which is different from them saying they were leaving the show, which is a part of like a PR agreement to attempt to save face. Mm-hmm. It was media outlets, myself, many people who were like, this was obviously they were fired, but the network never actually used that language. But in the article, they're like, yeah, their contracts were terminated specifically because of the racist behavior they exhibited, which could have been life-threatening toward Faith. And again, can't say it enough, was racist behavior. When it comes to Kelly, I don't get the sense from Bravo that they understand that what she is doing is racist. Like, to commingle it with a lot of Orange County people feel similarly, I don't know. If you're assuming that this entire county is overwhelmingly racist, which is just as problematic as the spread of COVID disinformation, then I would think you would want to inform people that that information is not factually correct, especially if the face of your network had COVID. I don't get the breakdown. I understand the importance of having different voices of people who are in opposition politically. I get the point of having conservative voices. I agree with the importance of it. I don't understand why it, to me, feels like presented accountability is really only geared by the network or approached by the network publicly when it has to deal with seemingly progressive voices, which, P.S., to me, are also the voices of Black women. Like, Andy saying at the beginning of the Potomac reunion, we disavow acts of violence or whatever. I'm like, since when? I don't understand why you're saying this now when it's the cast of Potomac and not at any other recent point of time when it's a cast that's not made of Black women. And the stuff with Kenya, absolutely, she should be held accountable. But I have a real issue with them going on the record and saying that she was held accountable and had conversation with an organization led by folks who are of Native American descent, which I think is important and great, but you're not also doing that with white housewives or non-Black housewives.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean, like,
concerning to me.
Think about how many times on New York, for example, that those kind of issues have come up and it's been crickets. It's, you're right. It seems to be only targeted at the Black casts right now, as far as like a comeuppance for behavior. And like, there's so many examples across franchises with, first of all, there's violence in every single city. I mean, Ramona multiple times has thrown shit at people and like actually drawn blood.
Truly. It's... Kristen, literally her mouth is like not funny, but again, this is like,
yeah,
it's, she's literally been, yeah, that's, there's, I mean, that's magical.
There's like that's a magical. Startling double standard there. And they really need to get their act together on that one.
And part of their response back might be, well, this is a different world than several years ago. Mm-hmm. So please don't continue using the Teresa example, because we are living in a different political climate, and I can respond and appreciate that. But I look at what they're doing with members of the Potomac and Atlanta cast, and I just don't see, I just, you cannot say that Kelly has been held accountable publicly, because in this very article, you're not giving me a single example of it. You're giving me examples of Kenya. You're not giving me examples of Kelly, and I don't want to take anything away from what happened with Kenya, but that was an isolated incident that was seemingly handled. Kelly goes on and on and on and on, and mm-hmm. you've never said anything publicly aside from a wink and a nod to your conservative audience.
Yeah. And going back to the violence thing for a second, the Monique situation with Candace happened within the same year as Danielle Staub pulling Marge's ponytail.
Oh my God, such a good point. Thank you for saying that. Such a good point. Mm-hmm. And Teresa, and listen, Teresa was forgiven
by
her cast within the context of the finale. And honestly, I thought I was going to hate her, but I was like, all right, like she's, I don't know how she's getting away with this, but she is, and I'm running with it.
It's crazy.
That was a strategized mm-hmm. moment. Danielle strategized being physically violent, physically aggressive.
It was planned by that guy who owns the boutique. He was.
It was planned by Stephen Dan and his $800 piece of shit candles you can get at fucking Forever 21. Honestly,
can I tell you? Can I tell you the Target candles, the full moon scent, $6.99 favorite candle. Six. Perfect.
Can I tell you the Dr. Tiffany Moon candles? I have been hoarding them. She sent me a set of six.
Oh my God.
I have not lit a single one because I just want to keep them in their box for posterity, for history. I need to light one of those fucking candles. There are some books I need to read for some upcoming, I'm excited to read for some upcoming AG episodes. I need to light myself a candle. I did have to ask some friends in the Bravo community, how do you light a candle? Because I don't know how to light a candle. And I thought you needed a candle. Yeah, you're giving me a look right now. I thought that you needed a candle holder. I Googled this. I'm a grown adult, okay? What did my parents do wrong? They put the fear of death in me. They said, if you start a fire by lighting a candle, we will kill you first. And I don't know how to light. I thought you needed a candle holder. So I asked people, where do I get like a, what do I put under the candle? Do I put a, I'm not joking. I said, do I put a plate under the candle? And honestly, I still think that I was maybe right in that.
Is
and
the candle
ridiculed me?
Is it just the wax? Did it not come in like a,
it's in a glass thing, but I thought you needed something underneath that. Do you not? You're giving me a look. I really don't know. I'm not a candle person. I feel like it's a lifestyle choice, and I just didn't know. I wasn't given the opportunity to pick that.
There's some like things that candle snobs do to like prepare the candle before you light it, but I think you can just like take
a ceremony.
No, not a ceremony, but like some people like trim the wick or like do whatever.
What?
Yeah. So, but my advice to you, light the candle, but make sure you burn it all the way through so that like all of the wax on the top is even before you blow it out, so you're not getting welling.
I don't know. I don't understand anything.
Okay. Welling is like, okay. No.
This is I was actually right then. It's not as easy. Also, I don't think I have matches. So I was just honestly, swear to God, I'm trash. I was just going to hold it over the stove and wait for it to light itself.
Oh my God.
That's bad.
Maybe
right?
Go buy a lighter.
But then I feel like the lighter is going to catch fire.
Oh my.
None of this makes sense.
This is, wow. This is next level.
I don't have basic life skills. And I just want to say, AGs, if you're out there and you have a historic fear, I have several fears. You know, back when dinner parties, even before dietary restrictions, mm-hmm. I get very nervous about eating other people's food.
Right.
I just need to understand the whole process, how you cooked. I want to feel like it was hygienic. I am a psychopath.
Okay.
Candles, obviously, I'm very crazy about. Scents, I can get kind of weird about. Buying an item that I feel like has even the slightest something, many, many sleepless nights. I bought a dress 4 times because I felt like a thread was askew in a couple of them.
Oh my God.
I am nutso. So I guess maybe tonight, maybe this weekend, guys, you'll see my social. I light a Tiffany candle. Anyway, this is a very long form. This is like a little.
Love a tangent.
Love a tangent. So getting back to whatever it was that we were saying about
the article.
Something.
Yeah, we were talking about the double we were talking about the double standards, and what got us here was specifically the violence that Danielle Staub did towards
Margaret. Steve and Dan.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just there's such a wild double standard, and if they want to say times have changed, which is why we're saying certain things, that's the perfect example, because those two incidents happened within the same year. So you can't really put that out there like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's and also I really do believe that the idea that a person's conservative political feelings protect them from racist behavior, I think, is wild. And to put all of it together into she doesn't believe in COVID, but a lot of people don't, so there's no problem there. I just think, then why are we having this conversation about network responsibility and doing better? That's the whole point of this, is that you guys are saying you want to do better. So maybe like have a call and loop everybody in. Because as of right now, it doesn't feel like a lot of people are getting that message, and we can do better. It's great that they're interested in doing better. It's great that this article came out. Would be great that when we get into like the second generation of them doing better, like, okay, we got iPhone generation 1. Once we're ready for like 5S, it would be great to see more consistency between the franchises.
Yeah, let's get a cohesive plan in place now that we've like gone through this year of realizing things. Remember when Kylie Jenner said that 2015 was the year of realizing things?
Yeah, when she was talking about her reality show.
Yeah, beautiful. I think about that a lot.
A moment. Also, I just have to say, one of the best, I'm obsessed with the Kardashians. I love following their stories. Several of them, I think, are incredibly problematic as human people. I would put Kendall in that. I would put Megan Carly in that. I would 100% put Caitlyn in that. Kylie Jenner's YouTube videos, there's like a name to it, but it's essentially like getting drunk with family members while we do our makeup is prestige television.
Love a video like that.
Kylie and Khloe getting shit-faced, trying to put blush on each other, drinking tequila pre-Kendall's 818 or whatever. Unbelievable. Excellent.
That is a great recommendation. Back when Vine was still a thing, Kylie Jenner actually had a really funny Vine account.
And Vine was like micro videos, right? Like it was like 2 seconds or
it
something?
It was like 6 seconds. It was,
okay.
Yeah.
two would be tough.
Yeah, 6 seconds. It was like the precursor to TikTok, basically.
Well, I mean, shout out to Kylie Jenner. Love what you're doing. Love the gifts that you're giving all of us. I do want to get your thoughts on a little present that a former New York housewife decided to bestow on the world this week, which was following the news that a former bachelor, whose name I think I'm going to fuck up, but I think it's Colton Underwood.
That's correct.
Right? Something along those lines. Publicly came out this week in a conversation with Robin Roberts and said that he is a gay man, and that has led to an enormous dialogue online about many members of the queer community, the LGBTQ community, discussing their own experiences coming out, and many did so in response to an unfortunate series of tweets that Carol Radziwill posted online, which connected the idea of coming out with deception and really placed herself, a heterosexual white woman, at the center of a gay man's coming out story in her critique and betrayal, which is some strong words that she maybe used in her thesis tweets.
I just think her first tweet, she missed the point. This guy's talking about like being repressed in part because of his faith and a whole bunch of other issues. He's not deceiving somebody because he wanted to date a woman when he hadn't dealt with the fact that he's gay. That's not that how that works, Carol. And the fact that she just kept going. She's
triple down on it. She's triple down.
She got ratioed, but then she just kept quote tweeting people who were like offering her legit criticisms of what she was saying. And it's like, Carol, we thought you were a journalist. Like, read the room. Like, figure out like what people are talking about. Listen to people. It's just like so disappointing that she kept on going and going and going and going and going. Like, the first tweet was stupid, yeah, but it would have been easy as deleting it. I'm sorry that I said that, it was dumb, but no, she just kept going. Like, does she have people in her life to tell her to like stop?
No, avocado sushi guy is long since gone. She doesn't have Chef Adam, and she has the cat and the dog. She has Baby, but Baby has two other owners, so like Baby didn't have the time, unfortunately, to slide into her.
Can't Megan King Edmund's brother come downstairs or whatever and tell her to delete it
for real? And also, Carol, when you're saying these things and you are also a white heterosexual woman, and a lot of people from the gay community who are identifying themselves as members of the gay community are telling you this is harmful, and that you are trying to have this hypothesis style conversation, thesis style argument that is actually at its core damaging to people. And Colton's not going to see your tweets, but people who include members of the gay community who have not publicly come out are. People are telling you your narrative is dangerous, please stop. And her response to people was like, in one tweet she was like, wow, another man telling a woman to be quiet. I am a woman telling you to shut the fuck up, because we are both heterosexual women. We do not have a place in the conversation. We especially do not have a place to add possible danger and harm to the experience of coming out, because we have not experienced it. You don't get to critique something for that is a part of a marginalized community that you are not a member of. It's really dangerous and harmful. And the white straight women who have been sliding into my DMs attempting to gaslight what Carol was saying and being like, well, but she's talking about this guy who was a shitty guy and has been charged with stalking and everything else. Nobody is saying that this guy is a great guy. Carol, you are attempting to commingle two different, entirely different conversations, but it doesn't, you can say two things at once. We are not talking about this man in terms of if he is a nice guy, if he's a good guy, if he was a supportive partner, or if he was toxic. Nobody is talking about that. We are talking about the problems of saying that to be gay and not acknowledge it to yourself or come out is a deception. That is harmful. That leads to actual dangerous, harmful behavior against members of the gay community. And if the gay community is saying that your narrative is dangerous, believe them, because you will never know.
Yeah.
You will never know the difference. So
yeah.
Just take them at their word.
Yeah. And to me, it comes down to, like, for example, in high school, I dated three different women. I later came out. I wasn't deceiving them when I was dating them. I thought that's what I was supposed to be doing, because society told me that you're supposed to be straight. I wasn't being nefarious or like evil by dating these women who all of them I still have like a nice relationship with to this day. I just was like dealing with like what gay people do before they come out, not knowing shit. So that's that.
I mean, it's a super valid, important point. And I also think Carol is on one hand saying, she's publicly saying The Bachelor's full of shit. This isn't even a real show. I've known it since the beginning because I knew about it before it was a thing. Like, good for you, inside info. It's a terrible thing. And then at the same time also saying, and these women who were looking for love were taken advantage of. Sweetie, all of those people signed up to me on reality TV. They may all have been looking for love, Colton included. Mm-hmm. They also were growing their platforms by obviously having an interest in doing that on reality TV.
Mm-hmm.
To say that this group of 20 women were like doves in the field, pristine angels ethically, who were looking for love in this dangerous person with this dark knowledge that they were using for whatever, is incredibly disingenuous. Mm-hmm. And it's actually that I think is harmful to women, because you are taking away the idea that these women are actively participating in this thing that strategically probably has more to do with finding love, sure, but also right. becoming a public figure than doing this. It's like you're taking away almost the agency of these women to make decisions that have more, that are more realistic when it comes to the interest in celebrity plus relationships. Mm-hmm. And she should know this. She's a former housewife of New York.
I know. And back when she was still on the show and her and Bethany were going through the things, I was strictly team friendship because I wanted them to get back mm-hmm. together as friends. Now I'm team nobody after like the way they mm-hmm. both, the way they both act at post show. I'm like, please just like stop tweeting.
It's really maddening to me that when a marginalized community is uniformly telling you mm-hmm. that regardless of your intent, your impact is harmful and you are writing them off. It's big JK. What's her fucking name?
JK Rowling.
It's big JK Rowling energy, who has said a ton of terrible transphobic language under the auspices, under the umbrella of I support other women. I do not give a fuck, because you're not supporting all women. And that's all I care about as a woman. Mm-hmm. And for Carol to do this under the idea that like we need to be supporting women is, to me, a heterosexual woman, bullshit. And I have a satchel of gold from David in Brooklyn, who says, here's a Carol satchel from a gay man. I don't know if many people realize that oftentimes the hardest person a gay person comes out to is themselves. Mm-hmm. It's easy in hindsight to say it would have been better to be open and honest and not gone on the show, but that was likely not possible for him at that point. And while it's unfortunate that all of those women ended up in a situation where they were pursuing a connection with someone that couldn't reciprocate, by centering the woman's experience and the possible harm done to them, she is ignoring the difficult situation he was in. This was actually addressed in a scene from the reboot of Will and Grace, where Grace finds a letter Will wrote when closeted about wanting to hurt himself, and she realized she has always resented the fact that she fell in love with him when he couldn't reciprocate and hadn't really thought about how hard it was what he was going through was.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Exactly.
I mean, and I love a Will and Grace example.
Oh my God.
For it, even though I didn't watch the reboot. I watched the first episode and then I got tired.
Oh yeah, very same.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly appropriate. And I just think if everyone in the room is telling you you're dead, it's time to lie down. Shout out to Heather Dubrow.
Oh my God, I miss her every day.
Every day.
I listen to her podcast because I love being a part of Heather Dubrow's world.
Mm. It's just, and how is her world?
It's just like a rich woman talking about being rich. So I just love the way she just like describes her like rich life. It's fun to me. And her, if you haven't taken a swing through her YouTube series where she does room tours of every single room in her house.
Heather's Closet. Yep, I've seen every episode.
Highly recommend. My favorite episode was the laundry room with the gift wrapping station.
Love that. Love her wallpaper that sparkles, yep. which literally nobody can see.
Yep.
She is tenderly touching this wallpaper. Her house looks like just the absolute worst Four Seasons in Aspen. Mm-hmm. It's devoid of any energy or style. It's a lot of gray, a lot of silver. Mm-hmm. It feels very cold, very austere. I love every room in the house. I love all of it. I love how true. She's going to sell it for $1 billion. Somebody is going to want to fucking buy that house at a premium, and she's going to build another monstrosity. I wish for her the very best.
She's building a monstrosity in, I think, Idaho.
Is she?
There's this one lake in Idaho where a bunch of rich people from California are like building around for their vacation homes. And I cannot wait to see the unveiling of that house in Idaho.
Does she even eat potatoes?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I mean, my something grade project, maybe first grade actually, was us. You had to choose a state in the country. Mm-hmm. I don't even think I got the choice, but I did get Idaho, which I felt like was very connected to my soul as a Jewish woman. Like, yeah, give me all of the carbs. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. I can actually tell you the shit out of Idaho, and its symbol on my like cardboard paper is going to be a potato because I am an artiste. And I hope that Heather enjoys the experience of getting to know, I guess, nature. I don't remember anything about Idaho. I guess she's going to stay in her house. It's going to be 9 million square feet.
Yeah, I think they're just going to stay in their house and enjoy like some fancy lake. So
what do you think is going to happen with Orange County?
We need to I think Tamara minimum needs to come back. I was the first person to be like, thank God she's leaving, but I think we need her back. We need somebody with like her energy. I mean, my dream is for Heather Dubrow to come back because my favorite years of OC were the Heather Dubrow years. I feel like, to quote Leah McSweeney, she elevated that shit in a way that no other housewife of OC has been able to do. It's just bleak. It's depressing. Elizabeth Vargas. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Yeah. Elizabeth Vargas, by the way, what did she? She was responding to Bravo by Betches. She was comparing her divorce, which nobody cares about, to something else in the Bravo world. And she just copy and pasted the exact like wink and a nod comment on several pages until she was called out and then I think deleted all of them. She's a mess.
She
compared herself to Erica Jane is what she did.
There's a sadness to Elizabeth Vargas that we haven't seen in a while on these shows.
Do you think Kelly is going to be back?
I don't know. Andy's comments make me think potentially, but we'll see. Did you watch last season?
I haven't watched a single episode.
Okay. Yeah, it wasn't great.
I heard it was the worst, but it's, again, an extremely low bar.
I know.
So, in Orange County, my God.
The thing is, like, Gina is my favorite of that group now, which is wild.
I'm hearing that from people. Yeah. They said that she had a great season.
Yeah, so I don't know. We will see. We will see.
I wonder if they are going to let Kelly go, but they're doing this almost superficial defense of her so as not to upset her stands or something, or like they have no plan to bring her back, but they're going to defend her now so that people will forgive them later. Maybe
I wonder if they're afraid of like the cancel culture conversation and like the fact that Kelly is so connected to all those people in that Fox News world. Like she's like at weddings all the time with like Kimberly Guilfoyle and shit.
Yeah. Don Jr.
Yeah. So maybe they're afraid of like those people lashing out on behalf of Kelly Dodd, which would totally be the bleakest timeline, you know?
I could see it happening. I also think she is going to fade. She would potentially fade so quickly or become so much sharper as that like QAnon person could, which is such a niche world that maybe it will elevate her in that place. But I really do. She has isolated her against or alienated herself against so many different segments of the Bravo community at this point that she really doesn't have anything to stand on if this is taken away, you know? She doesn't even have her fucking positive beverage. They realized she was a negative Nelly. You know, it's like, yeah, give her a hateful water next time. Give her some hateful, like sparkling something. I don't know.
God.
A mess.
Well, OC.
Right? Orange County. I mean, I do want to get your thoughts, you know, in our remaining seconds on the three franchises that exist that we're watching right now. What were your thoughts on the Carrie Brittingham of it all? That godforsaken situation they called a trip.
She's just like so, when she lashes out towards people, she gets so mean. It was like, why was she going after that man so hard? And then it's like, he ended up apologizing to her probably because he was just overwhelmed by the situation. I don't know. And then like her responding to that little fart bomb prank by pouring salsa all in their beds. She's unwell.
She has no respect for anything in this world aside from a bottle of tequila. And you can feel that in every single moment. She actually doesn't even respect the tequila because she acts out in such an outlandish way that the tequila is like, why are you ruining my brand?
I know.
What she mistakes mean for a joke, and it's just not funny. It's cruel.
Yeah. I will say sometimes she wins me over. Like her scenes with her daughters, I enjoy a little bit. Her one daughter, Olivia, I like those scenes. But other than that, I'm like, please stop. I mean, the only people I really like on that show are Tiffany, Deandra, and Cam. And Cam, it's just because she's like so oblivious. She's funny to laugh at. The scenes with the dog sidekick were really funny to me. And then my heart breaks for Dr. Tiffany Moon with her mom and like not feeling the connection with her mom. And then it's like Deandra's always talking about a will. It's like that's all she's got. It's I feel like every season she's just talking about a different will that somehow she needs to like figure out. So we'll see.
I mean, if one of the reasons that you're that you've had to make sense out of your mom being so emotionally withholding or manipulative or whatever is the fact that she's saying or making it seem like if you go against her, she's not going to provide for you in the ways that she was promised since the day she was born.
Yeah.
I mean, that would make me want to talk about a will an awful lot.
I know.
It seems like in many ways that family has been affected, countered, inspired by some amount of money that's just out of reach. And that's, I mean, it's interesting that the amount of emotional labor, just in terms of personal storyline, that Tiffany and Deandra have both shown us, both in relation to their parents or close family members, is astounding when you think about what Kieran did a little, but really more about amplifying her daughter's emotional labor. Cause I didn't, I still haven't gotten a sense of how that affected her as a parent, aside from saying it affected me as a parent, versus what Stephanie has done, which I would say is nothing. And what Brandy has done, which I would say is also nothing. I mean, it's wild.
Yeah. I mean, the only time I can really stand Brandy, I was when she was in the Bigfoot costume and when she was not speaking, I was like, okay, that's your role. Just put on a costume and like dance around. That's kind of a little funny. But other than that, I'm like, just get off the show, please. It's been enough torture.
I mean, I don't know if I'm allowed to share this, but I'm going to, which is word on the street is, as we know, or as many people know, Carrie and Brandy were not in the room for the reunion because Carrie tested positive for COVID and Brandy was sitting next to her on the plane. So they filmed their appearance at the reunion from what I believe are separate hotel rooms. They have been seen in New York filming together this week. I don't know how that ties up with the number of days you must isolate after testing positive and the number of tests you must take in order to test negative, but my assumption genuinely is that production is doing this on the up and up because it was such a public reveal, which hasn't even really officially been revealed yet. What on earth they are filming together, it makes me feel like it's sort of similar vibes to Reza and MJ filming, which was shown at the end of the Shaws of Sunset reunion, of like these two people sort of closing one door but hoping to hold another one a little bit ajar for an upcoming season. I'm thinking, like, what on earth could these women talk about that would be of interest that's not directly related to the reunion? Like, are you all just like shooting the shit talking about what happened? Like, what else is there to say?
Right. I mean, yeah, maybe it's like a we're saying goodbye moment, which I wish they would do more of. I was watching old episodes of OC recently in the season where Peggy Tanuas is on, and then the next season they give her like two episodes at the beginning and then she leaves the show. And I always thought that that's like a much better and more organic way to do things, like acknowledging that this person was with us, but then like saying goodbye. Maybe they're doing something like that at the end of the reunion for Brandy and Carrie. I mean, we could only hope.
I think we all acknowledge that that Brandy is not going to want to be back herself, regardless of what happens with the network. With Carrie, I think the majority of us don't want her back, but I don't think that the reunion is necessarily going to be her goodbye.
For sure.
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. It's wild.
We shall see.
Yeah, juxtapose that. It's like the poop and fart jokes, which if, you know, Housewives is supposed to be escapist in any way, it certainly doesn't feel it. I watch the seconds go by so slowly when I'm watching Dallas versus Jersey, which feels just so vibrant.
I feel alive when watching Jersey. And even like, I usually hate a medium or a psychic scene, but like this one was so fun in part because it was so funny and so obvious that the person who was doing the mediuming was like trained and like knew everything about all these people. But it just was like the things that were like revealed or whatever, it just was so great seeing Jackie in Tree's house made me feel alive. Just like watching Teresa have to host her nemesis and like doing a nice job. I thought it was going to be a setup. I thought that the medium was going to have something to say negative about Jackie.
Let's talk about the husband.
But it didn't end up being that. I love Jersey. Being down at the shore with them, beautiful.
Oh my God. I love shore time with them. I agree with you. I'm so happy that it wasn't a setup. As a Jewish woman, representation matters. I think we all need to forget that Sigalit was ever involved in anything ever on Bravo and embrace the fact that here is a seemingly unproblematic woman of Hebrew faith celebrating Rosh Hashanah, which is a BFD for Jews and like talking about wanting to have a sweet new year. You know, her mom broke out the apples and honey and I was like, yes, bitch, like this is welcome to Sarah Galley. This is your life.
Beautiful.
Mom's maiden name Shmuelowitz. Like, yes. And suffering through all those Rosh Hashanah meals, like bat mitzvah season, the worst time to be a tween Hebrew because every fucking Saturday was taken with another bar or bat mitzvah, like a nightmare. I want to see that represented. I want to see.
What was your bat mitzvah theme?
Broadway.
Oh, wow. Of course.
I brought back one of my bat mitzvah gifts, which I found in the basement of my family house the last time I was in Rhode Island 900 years ago, which I'm staring at now, which is a plastic cup that says original cast member Sarah's bat mitzvah.
Oh,
and then
wow.
It has one of those little cutout things at the bottom, which has like fake plastic Broadway, like jazz hats and shit that you can throw.
Fun.
And my dad being like very talented with like engineering, and he's always done very, very creative things with gifts and shit. For my brother's bar mitzvah and my bat mitzvah, he made 200 individual Torahs.
Wow.
My dad is raised Catholic. That you had a gold box. You opened the box. You saw a Torah tied with a ribbon. You unscrolled it and there was like Hebrew lettering left and right. And in the middle, like, you are invited to Jeffrey Benjamin's blah, blah, blah. And people got it like nobody had ever thought.
Wow.
And he made each of the Torahs individually with like dowels or something. I don't even know if that's the right word. Something wood, etc. Again, I don't understand.
That is amazing.
But yeah, we had very creative. And then my bat mitzvah dress was a nightmare and was crushed velvet. And my mom body shamed me as a 12-year-old and was like, I guess this will fit.
Wow.
And I felt terrible. But, you know, day of my bat mitzvah, I got to wear makeup. Real makeup, $15 lip gloss, and I got my first pimple, and it was a big day.
That's beautiful.
It was a beautiful story, and I lost that lip gloss like an hour later.
Sad.
May its memory be a blessing. What else is there to say? I feel like we've talked so much about current issues, which I love, and about this longer form conversation, you know, WTF, and also what to do next, that I think is really important.
For
I'm really
sure.
So appreciative for you coming on. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about Come Through Queen?
Oh yeah,
named in my honor. Thank you so much.
It is. So it's me and my friend Dan, and it's a Bravo recap show. So we go in depth on like what's happening in the Bravo universe, and then we go in all the shows. Right now we're doing all the Housewives that are on, plus Summer House, which is a gift.
Wow.
Episodes released every Friday.
So can I just get your thoughts? I tried watching this week's Summer House this morning and I couldn't do it. It was the first episode where I wasn't like super connected, but I think that I was just in my head about other shit. Like I need to rewatch it. I've been loving Summer House this season. What are your thoughts?
It might be my favorite show of all the Bravo shows right now. It's just like the cast is fun. The antics are fun. They're all like close friends, which is like great to watch. I love it. I can't say more about how much I love it.
Thoughts on Hannah's season 2 situation?
Hannah's
or third season?
Oh yeah.
She's giving me second season fuck up energy, but on her like third or whatever.
She's frustrating to watch and not my favorite by far. And the fact that like she came into the house this season, like open to the possibility of like Luke and wanting to be with Luke. But then she all of a sudden had this like serious boyfriend who came in and who's a total creep. Like he just like everything he says is like creepy.
I've so dated him. Not literally him, but him. I've dated people like him.
So
it's not a good idea.
Yeah, Hannah's not having a great season, and I don't think she was invited to the winter house. So there's that.
With Dez, I can't figure out, because I do think he's attractive. He's very handsome. He's also got that like silver fox thing that I die for.
Sure.
The PDA feels odd to me because as the cast are saying, like, why aren't you talking to any of us? You guys are just like sucking face. It feels a little immature, but also Summer House is a place you go to be immature.
Yeah, but there's levels of immature. It's like they're the, you know, in high school, there was always that one couple who for some reason was always making out in the hallways. And it's like there is a time and a place for that behavior. And it is not, they're making out, Dez and Hannah are making out 5 feet from all of their cast members. And it's not just like a peck. It's like full on like grinding and licking and like tongues out. It's just like, I'm not trying to be sex negative, but it's just like, if I were their cast members, I'd be like, this is uncomfortable for me. Like, go to your room.
I also don't want anyone having sex in my summer
bathroom,
bedroom or bathroom, or laundry room. It's so dirty.
Even the stuff that
literally dirty.
Even the stuff that Dez was saying, he was like, I should go like ejaculate on Amanda and Kyle's bed. It's like, you're disgusting. I don't know. I don't like them. I don't trust them. And I think they're snakes.
Oh, okay. There we go. just some light opinions. I also am just happy to see like Kyle and Amanda have grown so much. Carl has grown so much. My God.
For sure.
What I would do for 7 minutes in that laundry room.
Carl. Perfect. Perfect. I love him.
Right. Like, and Sierra has been such an awesome addition. And I love her saying to Luke, like, you're a piece of shit. Goodbye. Like, I have standards and you don't match them. You don't meet them. It's been really quality TV, I have to say.
Yeah. I think, like, we don't need Vanderpump Rules when we've got Summer House.
That's the thing. Just expand Summer House. I mean, I've been saying Fall House, August House for 100 years. Just get some, keep Summer House going, and maybe with different casts. Maybe you pull in a Summer House OG, but then you stack the deck with more Southern Charmers or maybe some VPR people, and you have it in several seasons. You can have different casts for different seasons.
Well,
literally seasons of like temperature or whatever.
With Winter House, the rumor on the street was that the Toms were supposed to be invited, but that they didn't want to leave there are significant others, and I guess Katie and Ariana, the invitation was not extended to them. That was a rumor at some point.
I could see that. I could also see them being like, we are, and I don't mean this in a critical way, but like they're too good for the show. I actually do think that could be true. Like, they are super famous in the Bravo sphere, and I could see that being an odd, it sort of like you know, there's Bachelor in Paradise, and then there's that guy who's engaged to that girl. This is super helpful. From Modern Family. I want to say his name is Wes, but I know that's not it. There's a Bachelor alum who goes on Bachelor in Paradise to be like the jokey bartender.
Right.
And it might be successful. My instinct is it probably isn't, because this person is already a big name in their own right. Like, why are they doing this side move? And it feels sort of similar to the Toms going on SH.
A paycheck's a paycheck. So
true.
Like,
somebody needs to pay the bills.
Tom hasn't LBP been open for months.
A minute.
So I don't know.
My God. Listen, I could talk to you all day. I'm so appreciative.
Of Brennan course.
For you coming on. Where can people listen to Come Through Queen and follow you online?
Wherever you get your podcasts. And then I'm on Twitter at NotBrendan. And then on Instagram is Brendan Davis.
I love that. And guys, follow him wherever. Listen, Patreon, still a thing. Get exclusive bonus episodes and support little fun employed Susie G over here. Patreon.com/AndysGirls. You get up to 4 bonus episodes a month, invites to special events. I love an AG Zoom Kiki. And you can also level up and co-host on a future Patreon exclusive episode of Andy's Girls. So go to patreon.com/AndysGirls for that. Guys, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Follow me online on Instagram at Dame Galley. I'm constantly doing polls and crazy things and posting selfies in the robe that I'm currently wearing, which is it's really my version of a friendship bracelet in addition to a tennis
situation. It's gorgeous.
Thank you. It's a sign of comfort and trust. And I share that with you, Brendan Davis. So I'm so appreciative. Guys, let us know your thoughts and feels on the New York Magazine app of it all, the kettle of it all. I hope today was informative for some of my fellow, specifically white lady folk who are heterosexual, who maybe took a moment. And, you know, we might have challenged some thoughts about Carol's conversation online and why that was inherently problematic. And I hope we've discussed a thing or two while we're listening. And I hope that we're receptive. And my favorite phrase is normalize changing your mind based on new information. That's the goal. We don't, unlike Carol and Bethany, we do not know it all. And so I think it's important for us to have these healthy dialogues and have differences of opinion.
Beautiful.
As long as they don't harm marginalized communities. That's where we draw the line. Guys, I hope you're staying safe, getting vaccinated, staying sane. And Brendan Davis, a joy as always.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right, guys. Happy weekend. We will chat with you soon.
Bye.
Bye.